It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
We still have a few leftover reactions to the Circle of Swarm that we did earlier in the show. If you missed it, Seth and I do this weekly. We put six players into the Circle of Swarm based on past performance and some hope for future performance. But this week's Week 7 Circle of Swarm was Will Anderson, Stephon Diggs, Neville Hewitt, Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, and Danielle Hunter. We had one person say, hey, Blake Fisher, how about him for Circle of Swarm for answering the bell when Tunsil decided he just wanted to hang out on the sidelines? That was
Fisher, I think that Fisher, he only ended up playing about 15 or 16 snaps in the game. I thought about him and the improvement that he's made since the first time he had to go in has been pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So he's on the watch list.
He's on the watch list. I think you and I have sort of maybe an unwritten rule right now about the Circle of Swarm and the offensive line that until they genuinely string a few games together where they look like a competent Coupe Shanistan run game, that the offensive line is just, they're basically the Circle of Swarm practice squad right now. You know, they're
Blake Fisher and Kenyon Green did a really good job on Joe Mixon's touchdown run. It's too much of the run game was still like, hey, let's rope a dope them by running the ball ineffectively with our core stuff, but then every now and then we'll throw in a wham here and have Cade Stover block the nose tackle.
Yeah.
And that's what ends up working. It's like, yeah, it's nice. It's nice, but it's not the stuff of a steady, actually imposing run game.
Sustainable.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I got to have the actual whole offensive line be in on it whole hog until I can give it to an offensive lineman.
Yep. Here's CJ Stroud. He's been Circle of Swarm a few times, not this week, but he's been in there a few times. Actually talking about Will Anderson Jr., it was fun listening to CJ and Will talk about each other this week, because these are the two cornerstones of the franchise moving forward. This was CJ. How proud are you of Will Anderson Jr. winning that Defensive Player of the Week award?
Man, I'm super proud of Will, you know, just the person he is, not only just on the field but off, you know, how encouraging he has been, not only in my life but in just the locker room, and, you know, his family and them just being so family-oriented and, you know, always showing everybody love. You know, him, his mom, my mom are very close, so I just think it's super dope that, you know, he's able to, you know, get what he deserves on the field, and he doesn't see a double team every play, you know. So I definitely love the fact that, you know, he came up with a big game, and I know, you know, he has a lot more coming for him, and, you know, I definitely know that, you know, he continue to be great.
I love that their families are close. The families seem awesome. I love the family when they were drafted that day and both the families were there. Like, they, I think that's cool. It's like
the fact
a college
that,
thing.
Their moms are close. Yeah, I like that. I like that maybe they go over and borrow a cup of sugar, something, you know. Just there's the part with the Texans that's one thing that's always bothered me is because it's such a spread out city, and because, you know, early on, a lot of guys moved to Pearland and out to Missouri City because there were really good deals out there. And other guys lived inside the loop. And it makes it tough to just actually get together as much.
Yeah.
And you end up being kind of cliquish at times. And I don't know. I feel like now the minimum salary is so high that they should just start making all players live somewhere inside the loop.
Yeah.
Just pick yourself right there somewhere in Bel Air or Maryland or something, or West U, and just, you have to live there. I don't care that you're a rookie. You're still making ridiculous, absurd money. You're living inside the loop.
They should create a Texopolis. Like the Astropolis. A Texopolis, yeah.
Or like an athlete's dorm type of situation.
Right, but it's
something.
A massively luxurious high-rise.
Yeah, that what's the building you live in? Hanover?
Hanover River Oaks, yeah.
Yeah, they got buildings all over the place.
They do.
A special Texans luxury apartment building.
Yes.
For nothing but, and I don't care how rich you are or whether you're one of those poor souls that's only making $1 million a year.
Right.
You're going to live in the Texopolis.
You're living in the Texopolis Hanover Swarm. Yeah.
Practice squad guys can have a suite in the basement or something.
There you go.
You're
like,
Seth, it's Houston. There's no, there is in this building. Okay?
In this building,
you're in your way out. You're in your way out of potential drowning by performing, getting elevated to the regular.
I love
squad.
That. Yeah. Hanover Texopolis. all right, CJ loves Will.
Ben, put that in my book of real estate ideas.
It's a separate book from the big
that
book of
I can
business.
Leverage personal connections into unethical business games.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. That I can use to launder various things. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Will Anderson on the C.J. Stroud relationship.
Me and C.J. sit in the front row of every team meeting, man. I get to see him every day, walking through the locker room, all that type of stuff. We keep each other grounded, man. We keep each other, like, we're both big in our faith. So anytime he see me down, he encourages me. Anytime I see him down, I encourage him, man. And to both be, like, the cornerstones on the defense and offense, man, we want to make sure that we're always keeping each other uplifted, man, because sometimes it can be a lot of pressure, and we're both hard on ourselves. And I can tell when C.J.'s being hard on himself, I said, man, relax. Like, you're going to be good. Like, you know who you're doing it for. You know who got you, man, and he already know who I'm talking about. So, man, it's great having a guy like CJ in the building, having a guy like that to have my back, man. He keeps me grounded. He gives me confidence, man, and I just want to keep playing hard because I know I got seven on the other side.
You said that your moms have become pretty close too. Is that cool that relationship is small?
Yeah, man, they're really close. They love football just as much as we love football, and they're fantastic. Like, we both come from really great households. Both our moms are really great. Everybody loves our mom. They love each other, man, and it's like a family unit here.
I feel like if this were Game of Thrones, that, like, mm-hmm. CJ would definitely be marrying one of Will's five sisters that he has.
Oh, yeah, and it would be one of the thing that everybody feels good about. But
right.
Then if it were Game of Thrones, then Will would, like, fall in love with somebody, some peasant girl,
yeah.
and screw up the whole thing.
Peasant girl from Nashville or
yeah.
Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Like, why is he allowing this Colts woman into our
all
house.
Of a sudden, CJ has to decapitate Will Anderson just to prove a point, even though he doesn't want
right.
to do it, and he's
got
to do it himself.
It's just in. These stories don't end well. It would feel good that we were combining their houses until...
It's never a simple A to B, okay?
It never is.
I need this to be like a bad sitcom where everything that happens is what you expect to happen,
and yet I'm kind of here for the storyline, man. I tell you what, the one thing I would like, the night that they drafted CJ and traded up to get Will, you could really see what D'Amico and Nick were thinking. I mean, it was pretty obvious. Like, we get to recalibrate both sides of the football with guys who are incredible leaders. I think it's exceeded expectations, and I think there's probably other teams that last year's draft and in drafts moving forward, the better the Texans get over time, they're going to be like, can we replicate this? And it's impossible to replicate it.
John, I think the biggest thing, too, is... It means a lot when Will says that, hey, CJ and I sit in the front of every meeting or the front row.
Yes.
That's something that in pro sports, I don't know how well you plan for it or against it. I think a lot of it just comes down to drafting guys who are football nerds.
Yes.
Guys that are genuinely nerdy for it.
Yep.
Because the back of the room dynamic and the front of the room dynamic is big. Like, you get teams will get a culture sometimes where, hey, I'm a pro, and basically you're too cool for school, and one of the things you earn is, hey, as a veteran, you could just sit in the back and, you know, just kind of do your own thing. That's a bad environment,
yeah.
and it goes downhill really fast, and sometimes it becomes a systemic issue, is that there's just a culture of, yep, feeling like, yep, I'm a pro, and pros don't care too much about it because I'm too cool for that.
Yep.
And it's, you don't want that. It's cancerous. So I think just having as many football nerds who are genuinely passionate about it as possible is the best antidote for it.
Yeah, well, and when they're, and I know this is the point, when they're your two best young guys also, like the guys who, when they're the ones setting the tone is just huge.
I talked to a guy once who is a former special ops in the military, and he mm-hmm. said that happens sometimes. It happens in all aspects of life, but even in the military, there'll be some units where people kind of feel like, oh, yeah, I'm a made guy, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily keep that edge. It's a constant battle of human nature to not let your ego get in the way or just to start feeling too comfortable.
Do you have any fear that happens with either of these guys? At all?
No, I think they'll stay dorky till the end.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Here's Matt Burke talking about Will Anderson. Will Anderson just talking about with CJ, like, hey, sometimes he's down and I get him up. Sometimes, you know, like, if I'm down, CJ comes over and he gets, you know, he gets me motivated again. Here's Matt Burke had a funny thing the very beginning of this, talking about Will Anderson's energy level.
The three sacks? I think actually Meek mentioned at one point, you could kind of tell, like, you can tell with Will, I mean, he's always up. Then there's some times where you're like, man, I don't even want to be around this guy because he's that up. So, you know, he really, you know, one of our themes last week was sort of like bring our own juice, you know, and we understood like what we're going to, you know, go on the road and who knew what the weather was going to be like, all those things. And kind of we were preaching like, man, we got to bring our own energy. And Will really like took that to heart. And so like you could tell right from the jump, like, like pregame warmups and kind of where he was from, like almost taking it upon himself to be the heart of the team in terms of the energy and what we were trying to bring. So to see that sort of translate into the success he had, I mean, it was really cool. Just, you know, I know the stats are great. And then honestly, I just always say this, like with him, you don't even see some of the stuff. Like if there was a stat for setting edges or like just closing gaps down or forcing cutbacks to other players, like those sort of things. I mean, the TFLs and the sacks are amazing, but he does a lot of other things in the structure defense to really help out. So it's just, he's fun to be around for sure.
I had to listen to that cut twice. The first time I heard it, I had to listen to it again because it took me a little while. When he said what Meek said, he's talking about D'Amico, but in my mind, it was Meek Mill had said something about Will Anderson. And then my mind went off wondering about whether, like, I can't keep up with the various dramas and everything. Is it a good thing to be called out by Meek Mill right now in a lyric or not? I don't know. I know Diddy is the one that you don't. If you'd been like, yeah, Diddy just dropped a song about Will Anderson, I'm like, no.
Yeah, you don't need to be part of that.
But the other part of it is, too, all the extra stuff. I think that we were talking earlier about, okay, the Texans have had a boatload of pressures but not necessarily sacks. Now they're catching back up where they've got the fifth highest sack total in the league. And it still does feel, in a lot of ways, almost like a no-name pass rush. Even though Will's got the most sacks and he's on pace for double-digit sacks, et cetera, et cetera. It's a group effort. It's a group committee.
Yeah.
D'Amico Autry coming back this week makes it more so that. Because D'Amico is going to really do a good job of when he's rushing on the inside or when he plays the defensive end and slants down to the inside, he will flush quarterbacks. Like, he just gets really good penetration. When quarterbacks do flush, he's good at tracking them down. And I think it's a very swarmy pass rush, more so than driven by any one individual.
With D'Amico, and they're going to need it this week. There's just no two ways about it. If the injury list holds up today and looks like it has the last 2 days, the defensive line is going to have to win that side of the football for the Texans this weekend. The defensive line and maybe a play out of Derek Stingley or Kalen Bullock to get the ball back for the Texans and get them on a short field at some point. Mm-hmm. Not that they need short fields with CJ at quarterback, but just the easier they can make it on themselves in that environment on Sunday, the better. With D'Amico, Seth, are you more worried about him possibly being rusty, or are you more enthusiastic about the fact that he may be fresher than all these guys? You know,
I'm enthusiastic about fresh legs.
Yeah, I am too.
And because he plays with a lot of violence,
yes.
A lot of good violence, football violence. And I think it's been pent up. He's probably frustrated, you know, with the suspension. I know he feels that he was done wrong in the suspension himself. There's probably going to be a whole lot of pent-up rage there. And he can waterboy his way into three sacks here.
I think
that'd
so.
That'd be nice. Yeah, I need him to be the least insulting version of what I can say, the waterboy treatment, where you just channel all that rage and focusing on opposing quarterbacks. You know what he needs to do? He needs to imagine that Jordan Love is that allegedly dirty compounding
pharmacist.
He's
the pharmacy, yeah.
He did him wrong, yeah. That he'll be up there, like, Jordan Love might as well be wearing a white pharmacist coat.
Right. Yeah. The pharmacist's head is on Jordan Love's body. I like that. Like one of those memes. Let's see here. Sean, tell Seth that Brady is just diversifying his portfolio.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay,
yeah.
I still know, like, there's other ways. Is that the only way to diversify your portfolio? I wasn't aware of that. That was a thing. Okay.
I
didn't realize that was the only, that in diversifying your portfolio, one of your only options is that you have to purchase 5% of an NFL team.
I'll tell you, a stone cold lock is that now the internet, the thing they're going to be looking out for every weekend, Tom Brady criticizing referees. And Tom Brady criticizing other NFL teams. The whole internet is going to turn into one big crossing guard. You know what I mean? Or one big narc on Brady.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they are. They're going to be, it's going to be like the PGA hotline.
Yes.
They're going to be calling in and be like, hey, he violated this condition.
Yeah.
Violated this condition.
They should set up a voicemail box at the NFL offices for people to call in with their complaints about Brady being overly critical of the league and the other teams.
That's the rabbit hole I want to get into this weekend. The people who call a PGA hotline to report rules violations.
How many times, fascinating to me. How many times a week do you think Florio does it?
I know that's exactly who I was thinking of, man. No, you know there's people. I mean, there's people. It's one thing if you see something glaring and you feel like, I have to speak out on this, or because you've got money on it, whatever. But you know there's some people that just sit there waiting for their chance to call the PGA hotline to report a rules violation.
Oh, yeah. And boy, if it comes to fruition, they feel like they have done the Lord's work, man. Like, thank God for me.
They call me the sheriff. Around these parts.
Around these parts. Oh, man. All right. Payne and Pendergast
the
with
Wyatt Earp of the Rolling Greens.
That's it, man. That's it. All right. Payne and Pendergast, five reasons I hate you. Someone just texted, oh, come on. It's impossible to find five reasons to hate Green Bay. Impossible. I protest. And then says, can't wait for the segment. I know I'm going to crack up. I know it. I think we've got a good five here. It was with much help from the audience yesterday. So we've got five reasons I hate you, Green Bay Packer edition. Getting up the appropriate amount of vitriol for the game on Sunday at noon that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. That is next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, let's do it. Let's get some hate going for the Green Bay Packers. One of the harder teams in the NFL to hate, I would say, and even their fans, very nice people. Had a chance to drink and eat brats with them a few times in my life up there in Green Bay, and it's been a delight. Unfortunately, we're putting aside those good feelings for at least the next 12 or 13 minutes as Seth and I work up appropriate vitriol towards the Green Bay Packers in a segment we like to call Five Reasons I Hate You. So let's get going.
Let's do this. I'm ready to hate Wisconsin, Green Bay, Appleton, the whole Green Bay greater metro area.
Let's do this. This is with a lot of help from the listeners because we were having a hard time doing this yesterday. So they contributed to this. Number five, big thanks to the texter who sent this one in this morning, and we should have been reminded of it yesterday when we were talking to Marcus Eversall of 107.5, The Fan. He went through the litany of kickers that they've had since Mason Crosby. They've had real kicking problems in Green Bay, so bad that they have now brought in Brandon McManus, who was let go from Jacksonville, I believe, because there were alleged issues on the team flight with some of the flight attendants and Brandon McManus. He's possibly a creeper.
He was alleged to have gone Urban Meyer on a couple of flight attendants, except without their consent.
Yes.
At least Urban Meyer was being a dirty old man with the consent of the woman he was dirtying it up with, whereas Brandon McManus was alleged to have done otherwise.
Yeah. Yes. Now, I believe it's all been settled, or else he wouldn't be back in the NFL. But nevertheless, there may have been some activity. We don't know, but
Did you sell your soul? Green Bay.
Right.
Did you sell your soul?
Yep.
You know?
So they
now, you've got a great history of morally upright people like Brett Favre and Mark Shimura.
Yeah.
And
forgot about Chewy, yeah.
You expect to
forgot about that.
Mark Shimura was the creepiest of them all.
Yeah. The babysitter. Oh boy. So that's number five. Brandon McMahon, their kicker is quite possibly a very creepy person. Number four. Our guy, Stephon Diggs, and he is our guy. He's one of us. It's been stated by Bobby Slowick. He is one of us. He has beef, or had beef at least in the past, with Jaire Alexander, the Pro Bowl cornerback for the Packers. This is back from October of 2022. On Halloween 2022, the Bills played the Packers, and the Bills emerged victorious in that game, 27-17. Before the game, Stephon Diggs, the video of it is tremendous. He's running, he's getting right in Jaire Alexander's face as the teams are running out of the tunnel onto the field. And there's,
and it's just Diggs. It's like the entire Packers team and just Diggs.
Way more Packers than there are Bills. Yeah. It's Diggs and the entire Packers team, but Diggs is right up in Jaire Alexander's face. Here was Jaire Alexander explaining, or explaining his side at least, of what happened. This was from that very day right here.
What happened in the tunnel before the game when you guys yawned at each other going on the field?
Ah, man, I was just keeping it real with him. Told him he couldn't mess with me here, little boy. So that's all that was. Just being honest, you feel me? That's all I can do.
Yeah, well, he has 6 catches, 108 yards.
He's just a little boy.
He has 6 catches, 108 yards, and a touchdown. Okay.
He's just a little boy.
You're
a little boy, Sean.
Diggs got him for 6 catches, a 108, touchdown. The Bills won the game, 27-17. Now, Diggs was asked about this earlier this week. Might have been yesterday. Landry Locker asked him about the beef between Diggs and Jaire Alexander. Here's what Steph had to say.
Do you look forward to the battle, though, with Alexander? Y'all have got a little bit of a history. Y'all have gone toe-to-toe. Do you look forward to competing with him?
I could say, yeah, but it's no different than I approach any other week. I'm not going out there trying to prove nothing. I ain't trying to prove each and every other week, every play, every day. You know, try to earn it during the week in practice, you know, get on the same pace as my quarterback. I don't really get into all that.
All right, so Diggs didn't take the bait, but we will put the bait out there again on Payne and Pendergast. Diggs v. Alexander, reason to hate Green Bay. Jaire Alexander.
The Diggs has had some really good production versus Green Bay. It's not all, you know, one-on-one. It's not all one-on-one production of Diggs versus Jaire Alexander, but it's not like the Packers have done an awesome job of limiting Stephon Diggs. So
a lot of Minnesota games back in the day, right?
Yeah. But they go back to the Minnesota versus Green Bay days. So this is a little bit of an interdivisional rivalry rehashed. And I look forward to it.
I do too.
I think that I look forward to an implosion by Jaire Alexander at some point, where he's pointing at and blaming somebody else. I hope he's blaming the safety at some point when it looks like Stephon Diggs is torching.
They're pointing at each other. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Let's create dissension from within.
Dissension within the ranks. I like it, Seth. I like it a lot. All right. So 5 reasons I hate you. Number 5, Brandon McManus, possible creeper. Number 4, Jaire Alexander v. Diggs. Diggs is one of us. Number 3. It gets deep now. Green Bay harbored Brett Favre for well over a decade. Possible welfare fund stealer and known wiener pick sender, Brett Favre.
that's known.
That's known.
That's not alleged.
That's not alleged. We can say with 100% certainty, Brett Favre sent wiener picks to Jen Sturger, was the name of the young lady, back in the day. So
Yeah.
Nice job, Green Bay. Sounds like a real gem. Yeah. Brett Favre. So, yeah, they
you guys do great things. You turn out incredible quarterbacks and then ruin them.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow something in Green Bay breaks quarterbacks. Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers are both broken in some regard emotionally. And I feel like it's only a matter of time until Jordan Love becomes broken himself.
Let's hope so. Let's get
Let's hope for that young man's inner turmoil and torture.
It's a segment of hate. Let's hope so. Number 2.
One thing I still have yet to see. I've managed to avoid in my life seeing a lot of things I don't want to see. I still have never seen the Brett Favre photo. I've never seen 2 girls, 1 cup. I've never seen Paul George's broken leg. I have a sixth sense for staying away from stuff like this.
Okay.
It's never popped up in an email or something without me realizing
now
what
I know,
it was going
to
be.
Now I know if you and I ever do a show bet on anything, what the stakes need to be, is that we need to sit you down.
I have to sit down and watch all of the worst stuff on the internet.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good payoff. All right, number 2. Brett Favre is number 3. 5 reasons I hate you. Number 2, let's talk about Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, who I actually liked when he was kind of in his prime and he was winning MVPs. I liked Aaron Rodgers. There was not a lot of reason to hate him, but then he became weird, strange, ayahuasca, dark retreat Aaron Rodgers. He became immunization liar, or at least truth stretcher. Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers.
You know what it was? He was an equivocator. Yeah. He didn't lie. He didn't lie.
Equivocator.
He just said something misleading. Yeah. It wasn't false, but it was misleading.
I just think we can all agree he's not very likable right now, right?
No, the biggest one for me was him claiming that the Packers never reached out to him. And then when he was caught in that lie,
he said
that it was because he didn't have good cell service in Malibu.
Last I checked, there's a lot of people.
This place
in Malibu,
and apparently no Wi-Fi in his home where he could use data or something.
That's a lie. Yeah.
That's it's honestly the thing that bothers me most. It's just that he got flat because you know why? Because he flat out he basically tried to throw somebody under the bus completely immorally, like claiming that the Packers never even tried to contact them.
Yeah.
And then when caught in that lie, made up another lie. And meanwhile, also acted like when he was on his dark retreat, he was upset that the Packers had made their decision. Well, he had consciously made himself unavailable for at least 72 hours or whatever it was. Like, dude, what the hell? The world does not revolve around you all the time, man.
He went to Egypt during mandatory minicamp.
Well, that's not going to be the reason that they lose a game. Oh, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Now then, when Mike Williams and him are on the same page.
Right.
In the second half of a football
game.
Threw
him under the bus, by the way.
When could they possibly have gotten on the same page? He has prior obligations to his Egyptian vacation.
Yeah.
He can't be spending it working with his receivers during mandatory minicamp,
yep.
Sean.
So that's number two, Aaron Rodgers. Five reasons I hate you. McManus, 5. Jair Alexander, 4. Favre, 3. Rodgers, 2. Number one is just really sort of an amalgamation, a combination of the last two. The quarterback thing. This is a franchise that has had Pro Bowl-level quarterback play for the most part. For the last, it's coming up on, 30 years now? 32 years. 1992 is when Brett Favre got to Green Bay.
Yeah.
They had Brett Favre all the way up through 2007. Not every year was great, but you had Brett Favre. It at least is interesting in the bad years. And he answered the bell all the time. That dude never got hurt. Then you had Aaron Rodgers, 4 MVPs for the next decade and a half. And now you seamlessly transition over to Jordan Love, who I think is conservatively, I would say, one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, if not top 5. We'll see how it plays. They haven't been doing it all that long, but we'll see how it plays out. No fan base deserves this. I don't care how nice you are and how many bratwursts you give to strangers when they're in from out of town watching your games. No fan base deserves this.
You need to be put back in your place.
Thank you,
damn
Seth.
It.
Yes.
You need Jordan Love to turn into the worst version of himself so you can understand pain.
Yes.
I know, listen, we're talking to the 55 and 60-year-old Packers fans. They've known pain. They went through the Tony Mandrich years. They've seen exactly what life can be when you're one of the laggards in the NFL. But your children and your grandchildren are insufferable, and they are in danger of never being reclaimed as decent human beings.
Correct.
Because all they've known is a football team with good quarterback play.
That's right.
All right? So if you care about your children, and I'm not sure that you do, but if you do care about your children and your grandchildren, you'll hope that Jordan Love actually ends up sucking.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
If you care about your family.
If you care about your kids having to experience a little adversity. I mean, think about the 20 and 30-somethings that had Tom Brady their entire football watching lives so far. Those are insufferable people. They've turned into bad people.
Yeah,
there.
They have.
Yeah.
Really bad people.
Bad people.
Boston used to be a delightful place with nice and cheerful people.
All the time.
It was, yeah. And then the Patriots started their reign of terror, and all of a sudden they got grumpy.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So you want...
Bunch of little King Joffreys running around out there.
That's it. Thank you. Hey, speaking of King Joffrey and Game of Thrones, you and I were talking about earlier, like if the Texans were Game of Thrones and the Anderson and Stroud households... Who have much love for each other, that they would combine their houses with C.J. Stroud and one of Will's sisters. And then Will would screw it up by going and finding some peasant chick from Nashville to really turn the storylines into
He'd fall in love. He'd screw it up by falling in love.
A texter says, peasant girl from Nashville, you mean Will falls in love with Haktua chick? That would be awesome. Will Anderson with Haktua.
No, it wouldn't. You know why? Because that would be like the kid in Bull Durham, the nice Christian kid that ended up falling in love with the
town whore,
the woman of questionable morals. I don't know. Sometimes those women. Listen, I'll say this about Will's future.
Yeah.
Nashville bride. Sometimes they just say, you know what? Their childhood led them to do some crazy things, but then when they find the right person, they settle in and they change completely.
Will would be a good influence on her, I think.
I know that from Facebook, that at least publicly, a lot of those publicly. Women present themselves as something much different than what they were in high school.
Thank you for saying publicly.
And I just assume that, whatever their Facebook persona is, that's exactly who they are now.
Matt Burke was great yesterday, the Texans defensive coordinator. He talked about getting DeNico Autry back. What are you getting? How do they work him back in as well? Matt Burke answered that question. We'll have that for you coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I think one of the biggest things to watch in this game on Sunday, and we'll lay out multiple things in the 9 o'clock hour, getting you ready for Sunday. Packers-Texans, 9 a.m. Texans countdown, noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. Getting DeNico Autry back, maybe bigger than ever, depending on what the rest of the defense looks like medically. They may be missing two linebackers, and they will be missing two members of what would be their starting secondary, the Texans will. So this will be a game that, on defense at least, needs to be won by the defensive line, which loses Mario Edwards to a suspension, but gets back DeNico Autry. Here's Matt Burke, defensive coordinator, yesterday, on what the Texans are getting back in DeNico Autry.
I would say he's tough. Toughness, first and foremost. I would say he's a very unique rusher, just as a sort of, not really, I want to say hybrid, but as a big end and an inside rusher. I mean, he's had success at both spots, so it's he just offers some different pitches in terms of when he rushes inside, he rushes like an end inside, which is hard sometimes for guards. A lot of times offensive linemen interior can, there's not a lot of space. It's close quarters combat when you're rushing inside, right? And so sometimes there's not a lot of room for moves or things. You got to be a little bit more direct. Somehow he's able to create some space and rush. Like when you're rushing on the edge and you have sort of a little bit more area to like build momentum and put a move on and stuff because you're operating in a wider space. He kind of brings that ability inside, which is kind of hard sometimes. It's pretty unique for him. So he can rush on the edge, he can rush inside, and I think he's just, because he's kind of like a, said again, like sort of a in-between type of end tackle, he kind of brings a little different style of rush to the front.
I think the biggest thing there, the difference in DeNico Autry rushing inside as a defensive end compared to a lot of other guys is just the violence of his hands. He's got real violent hands in a good way, and that creates space where a lot of times defensive ends will rush down inside, and if they don't have something to squeeze through at the beginning, they just kind of get stonewalled by a sturdy guard. DeNico comes down inside and just blows dudes up, and that's good individually because he's had a lot of sacks either slanting inside or rushing from the defensive tackle position. But also when you start to run some of the games and everything, it also helps clear up space for other people too, because he's blowing guards up and ear-holing them, and that frees the defensive tackle up to replace around the end. There's a level of swarminess to DeNico Autry that's unique to him. And he's a little bit different than anybody else on the defensive line. I'm excited to watch him play.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. I'm super excited for this because I got thinking just now, Seth, hearing Matt Burke talk, listening to you talk. There was a brief point this offseason, very brief, where DeNico Autry was their best signing. You know, the first day of free agency, they didn't do anything. Remember, everybody was freaking out. Texans didn't sign anybody. And then their first signings were Azeez Al-Shaair and DeNico Autry. The big-ticket guys had not become Houston Texans yet. And I was cool with those two signings. Like, I feel good. I'm like, Azeez Al-Shaair makes a lot of sense, man. This is a guy, a productive linebacker who's been with DeMeco before. Linebackers in need, that's good. DeNico Autry is a guy that we'd seen up close multiple times each year with the Colts and the Titans, had very good games against the Texans. So there was a point where I was, like, super DeNico Autry excited. And then all of a sudden they're going and they're getting Joe Mixon and Danielle Hunter and trading for Stephon Diggs.
And we're
running over here like, sorry, you were hot like 2 weeks ago, DeNico Autry. I'm going to go over to these much hotter chicks over here. This is no disrespect. But there was a point in the offseason for like a day where I was like, man, DeNico Autry, I dig this, man. DeNico and Will Anderson, that's going to be good.
Right, and he would have slotted in as the defensive end that started opposite of Will Anderson.
Correct.
So he was going to be a defensive end who can go down and rush inside on third downs and everything. And he's still going to be that. I mean, he's going to play end. I think he's in nickel and dime or in passing situations. He's going to go down and be an interior rusher. He's not, a lot of people have asked me, okay, but can he play three technique? Can he play defensive tackle? I would say no, not ideally, and definitely not when you've got, you know, whether Fadakasi plays or not, you still got Khalil Davis and Tim Settle and Kurt Heinisch.
Yeah.
So those are when you need bulk, those are your guys. When you want pure pass rush, then Danico Autry is one of the options for down inside.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see. The Fadakasi injury is flying under the radar a little bit just because the other ones appear to be just so urgent. You know, the cluster of linebackers, the cluster in the secondary. Like, you're really depleted in those two areas. And so the Fadakasi one is kind of flying under the radar, but he's been really solid for the Texans this year.
He's been solid. I think both he and Mario Edwards have gotten a lot better as the season has gone along. So the loss of Mario Edwards, I don't want to gloss that over.
Yeah.
He and Fadakasi were the guys that they trusted the most. But other guys have also stepped in and done some good things there. So it's just not as... it's not as big a drop-off, I think, potentially, as it is at other spots.
No, I agree with that. But... I mean, there's a chance you're without your, and I know starter is a weird term on defense because, yeah, you started Nicholson, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is, with Mario Edwards and Foley Fadakasi, you know you're missing Edwards. Fadakasi has not practiced this week. The two linebackers, Al Shire and Toa Toa,
yeah,
and then Ward and Lassiter, those are six of your starters.
That's a lot. You know who didn't have six of their defensive starters
Dallas.
Last week? The Cowboys versus the...
Dude, I knew exactly where you were going with that. Yes.
Yeah. Now, I don't think the Texans defense has it in them to just completely not show up at all.
Oh, and God,
look, no. Like they didn't want to tackle a running back.
No.
The swarm quotient is it's vastly different between the Cowboys defense and the Texans defense right now. But yeah, it's not a small matter. Cumulatively, take out whatever the guys' names are or not. There's six guys who are better than the guys that are going to be playing on Sunday are going to be sitting on the bench.
Yeah. And it's and four of them are right up. Well, five of them if you count Jimmy Ward, like right up the middle. You know what I mean? Like right, you know, right up the middle for a team that has Josh Jacobs, one of the better between the tackles runners on the team, or in the league, I should say. Here's one more from Matt Burke. How do you work Danico Autry back into the mix?
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I mean, I think it's, again, like we just, all our guys play the same style. And then it's just a matter of, as you get into trying to figure out how you want to rush, if you have the opportunity, you know, these guys do a really good job of sort of trying to limit your substitutions and quick snapping and keeping guys on the field. So for us, the fact is really going to come in and like how we get guys on the field to rush and if we can and where we want to put those guys in for the matchups that we want. So in terms of our normal rotation, like he's just going to be part of the group and go play ball for us.
Do you, the trying to rotate guys in, it's funny. It's the thing that's most like hockey in football is the defensive line rotation, because there's times where you got to swap guys out super fast. When you're facing a team like Green Bay, you're kind of waiting for a moment where the clock's going to stop and the guys, like the action comes to your sideline.
Yeah.
So a guy, one defensive tackle can just stay on the sideline while another guy rushes in and you're trying to figure out the personnel and everything along the time at the same time. And I thought of it last week. The Patriots had that 12-man on the field penalty. I was watching that poor fat defensive tackle run off to the sideline, and I'm like, dude, you got to get moving. What do you do? You got to get moving. I saw that coming a million miles away because that was it's stressful, man. You're a big guy. You're tired.
You've been in that situation.
Well, yeah, and I used to get made fun of for always sprinting off the field, but I was so paranoid about it. Like I was gonna sprint. Let's call it a 4.8 40 off to the sideline,
right.
Sean. Yeah,
I was running my
4.7 40 all the way off to the sideline every single time.
It was the felt like speed. You know, the felt like temperature outside, like
yes,
it's 96,
yes,
but it really feels like 108.
There's a crown on the field, you know. So yeah, I got a little bit of an assistance from the decline. Probably a 4.65 4.7.
Ran a 5.2, but it felt like a 4.5.
Yes.
That's funny. This is a tough assignment for the Texans if they're down all these guys. We'll see. Big one today. D'Amico will meet with the media today. We'll get an injury report this afternoon. And
I'm trying to think if there's any actual basis for this or if this is just my gut feel. The I feel like one of the linebackers will play. I think Azeez Alshire, in a week where they were really, they're taking it easy on the team because they're as banged up as they are. They had a walkthrough on Wednesday. They practiced Thursday. They'll have another glorified walkthrough or jogthrough today. And I think they're just being extra careful with Azeez Alshire.
I agree with you on that. I Toa Toa, because it's a concussion and it's Friday now and he hasn't practiced this week, that feels like something that just by rule they're going to be more conservative with. Again, not knowing what, you know, how he's doing versus his baseline testing and stuff like that. There's just too much red tape and rules that go with concussions for me to be confident that a guy who's out with a concussion is going to be back on Sunday. But conversely, Azeez Alshire feels like a guy who could get shot in the leg the day of the game and would try to get on the field.
And it's not something that put him on IR. Yeah. So I think he's going to try. He'll probably try to play at least. That's the tough part is when it's time to name the game day inactive.
Yes.
You got to really figure out, like, all right, I know he wants to be out there and I know he'll give it a heroic effort. But if he just doesn't look in that pregame workout like he's going to be that guy, they might have to make that decision.
Interesting text to the anonymous text page. Who would you rather have on Sunday? Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen, the projected starters if Alshire and Toa Toa are out, or the 2021 actual starters, Kamu Grugier-Hill and Christian Kirksey?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I feel better about Hansen and Neville Hewitt.
Yeah. So that's,
I think that,
it's a good glass half full way to look at it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
They got guys we feel
I liked okay Christian Kirk. Kirksey was good for what they needed him to be, which is a guy who's a bona fide veteran that can work with younger guys and kind of be a good example for how to be a professional and all that.
Yeah.
Kamu Grugier-Hill, it's not his fault that I got agitated with Kamu Grugier-Hill mostly because of things that people would say about Kamu Grugier-Hill.
Right.
That they would act like, oh my gosh, this guy's a revelation. I can't believe they found him. Meanwhile, when he wasn't making a tackle, he was 50 meters away from where you're supposed to be.
He was in Pasadena.
Yeah, he was like on the opponent's bench drinking Gatorade because he'd bit so hard on play action, or he was still in coverage. There would be a running back would be 30 yards past the line of scrimmage, and Kamu Grugier-Hill would still be plastered on the tight end in coverage.
Sticky in coverage, yeah. All right, yesterday, excuse me.
You all right, man?
I'm good. Yeah, I just got to clear my throat. What's today? The 18th? Today's the 18th. Sunday is the 20th. Sunday is the 28-year anniversary of one of the all-time rants in NFL history. A coach ended up getting fired possibly over this. Do any of the coaches teetering on the brink of getting fired have this rant in them if their team loses on Sunday? That is next. But Seth has an injury report right
now. Oh, the injury report. Yes. You guys might recall that Azeez Alshire has a knee injury. He does. Henry Toa Toa, his noggin. Robert Woods, foot. Foley Fatakasi, shoulder. It just goes on and on and on. And it's all on defense, except for Woods, obviously. Kamari Lassiter with a scapula, the most useless of all body parts other than the appendix. And Jimmy Ward with a groin. Lots of injuries. And that's your injury report brought to you by Mocarum Injury Lawyers.